My name is Michelle Owen, and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date today is the 28th of September 2009, and the time is now 5:22 p.m. Could you tell me your name, your age, and where you're from?
My name is Ben Stevens, and I'm from near Newmarket in Suffolk, and I'm 39 years old, going on 40 in a couple of months.
How are you feeling?
Excited.
Can you describe what you're wearing for me, please?
Yeah, I'm going to be spending my hour on the plinth in a gorilla suit because I'm up there raising money for a charity that I'm associated with, and one of my sponsors is a company called Go Ape, who run treetop adventure parks around the country, and they kindly donated a lot of money and said, would I go up there dressed as a gorilla? So I'd duly oblige anything for money.
Tell me a bit more about the charity and what they do.
Yeah, the charity is called the Colonel's Fund, and it is a charity that has been set up by my old army regiment, the Grenadier Guards, and I'm raising money for them. It's a fund for looking after wounded and wounded and mentally scarred soldiers when they come back from operations. We're discovering that quite a lot of soldiers are coming back, and many, many years later the problems begin to appear from combat. So by then they've quite often left the army, so the army isn't around to look after them. But because they're in a family regiment and that family likes to look after its own, that's what we do. So we try and pick up the pieces when things go wrong.
Is that very common that these problems do arise many years later as
yeah.
opposed to...
Yeah, it is. At the time you've got all the wounded and the guys who, you know, lose limbs and things like that, and all that sort of stuff, and the military is fantastic at looking after them and doing all of that and getting them fixed up, but years later you end up with these sort of bubbling problems of post-traumatic stress disorder, that sort of thing, and just some, you know, mental issues where you're trying to comprehend the life around you compared to the one where you were fighting, and they're very, you know, it's very difficult for some people to make the leap from combat to back to normality. So quite often, you know, their marriages break up, or they lose their jobs, or, you know, financially they get into trouble, or they get into trouble because they've done something which, you know, they've done as a sort of instant reaction to somebody provoking them, and, you know, things can go wrong for them. So we try and sort of step in and pick up the pieces, and nine times out of ten, that's, you know, it's spending money with psychologists, it's spending money to make sure their family and children are all right while they're recovering, or whatever it is.
And how did you first become aware of the charity?
Well, I used to be a soldier myself, and I keep in touch with the regiment quite a lot, and a lot of the guys who I used to soldier with are still in the army and are now, you know, intensive operations has increased the last few years. The regiment are doing a lot of tours in Afghanistan, and, you know, you can see through the press, you know, lots of people coming home not how they left, and you know, we decided after the last tour where we had a lot of wounded and a lot of guys killed that we needed to raise some money because we were going to have problems in 5-10 years time, and there's nothing like, you know, focusing them, you know, to get money out of people, you know, you can get it now rather than sort of 10 years time saying, hey, do you remember? That, you know, and I just got involved that way. So this is a sort of, I've done a couple of fundraising things, and it seemed a good use of my hour on the plinth to you know, get people to dig deep again.
When did you join the Grenadier Guards?
I joined them in 1989 and I left in 97. I served 8 years, left as a captain, and so a lot of my young soldiers, my young guardsmen, are now senior sergeant majors and, you know, quite high up the hierarchy. Some of them are now officers as well, and are now going out on these tours, and so one still has a connection with them, and obviously one catches up with them when they get back, and you know, you can see the effects. And contemporaries of mine who I joined with, who stayed in, who are now, you know, highly successful colonels and what have you, you know, some of them are still in the trenches doing the hard stuff, and you know, that's how you get to see that things aren't all right when they come home.
Where did you spend the bulk of your time?
Well, back in the early 90s, I spent most of my time in Northern Ireland, which was sort of all gearing up and heading towards the Good Friday Agreement in 94-95. So I spent most of my tours there. I spent some time in the Middle East. We had, obviously, the first time we went to the Gulf in 91. The Balkans all kicked off in 94-95, so you know there was plenty going on, but nothing of it is like what they're doing today in terms of intensity of operations, in terms of actual combat. It was very, very different. Well, we were very peacekeeping. A lot of our roles were peacekeeping. A lot of our roles were what we call counterinsurgency. So you are moving in a civilian environment with, you know, like you used to see on the, you know, patrolling in Northern Ireland and all that sort of thing, fighting a small band of people, of terrorists. Very what they call low intensity conflicts, because we weren't using artillery, we didn't have helicopter gunships, navy, fast jets, all that kind of thing. You know, it was very much the Tom walking the streets for a lot of those operations. And obviously now you know you've only got to see it on the television, you know, it's full-scale battles, and it's, you know, very, very different. So you know, there's been a big shift. Life's got a little bit more intense if you're a soldier recently.
Did you say you left in
97? Yeah.
And what have you been doing since then?
Since 97, I've done a number of things, but basically I now run a business called Crossbar FX, which is a foreign exchange business, which I set up with a chap who actually used to be a soldier with. And we set that up in 2004, so we gave 5 years. And basically that's a buy and sell currency for companies and individuals who normally use their bank but don't get a very good exchange rate from the bank, and I can get them a better one. So, you know, paying your supplier in China for whatever it is you import, you have to buy some dollars, I'll get you more dollars for your pound than the bank will give you. And that's purely because I buy more dollars than you do. And the more you buy, the better the price. So that's what I've been doing. Set that up 5 years ago. Before that, I worked at various sort of roles in and around the world of corporate finance, city, numbers.
Had you run a business before?
No.
What's that been?
Took the leap when my children were small and the bills weren't too big. And one was young enough to have the courage to go and do it, and then say, right, I'm going to set my own business up, let's see if we can do this. And knowing that actually, you know, if it didn't all go right, well, by the time you were 40, you might be able to get another job somewhere else. But yeah, if we run out of courage.
Would you do it now?
If I knew what I knew then yeah, because there's still an opportunity, there's still a market for it. So yeah, I think you could start off now. But it's got harder now. That was the right time, regulatory wise, and setting up a business and doing it in this financial services that I'm in. The window of opportunity was then. I think to try and start now would be quite hard work in terms of upfront costs, because the whole regulatory environment has all changed since over the last year, and lots of money is required, which, as you know, anyone who sets up a business normally don't have very much of.
How did you hear about this project?
From my wife, who we coming across it in the press, and she and my eldest son applied, and they walked into the office one day and said, why don't you fill out the form and apply as well? It'd be really great if one of us got something there. And luck would have it, I got the tick in the box.
And they didn't.
Gutted.
Why did you want to?
Because I didn't think I'd win. Because I thought, yeah, I could do that, and yeah, I'll never get. I never get picked for these sort of things. And I hadn't really given it much thought. It was like, yeah, sounds like fun. It'd be good. And my wife was very into it, and my son were like, yeah, wouldn't it be great? And you know,
no other member of the family is on a plinth in London, so come on, you've got to be the first, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, I just said, yeah, come on, let's go for it. And then when I got the email saying you're on, I then thought, oh. And I spent about a month going, what am I going to do? And thinking, I don't want to go, I don't want to do it, I can't, what am I going to do out there? Look like a fool, because I kept looking on the site, looking at people, and some are doing great things and some weren't. And I was thinking, and then the penny dropped. My wife turned around to me and said, well, why don't you try and do it, raising money again, because my regiment are literally this week posted back out to Afghanistan. So she said, well, why don't you see if you raise a bit more money for them? And then we got into the idea of, and chatted to a few of my mates in who run other businesses, and said, well, you guys, I could cycle as a gorilla, would you throw some money at it? And then that got the momentum going, and now it's too late. We're on. We're here.
Would you say that you're doing this for charity, or would you say you're doing it for yourself too?
I'm doing it for charity. I don't really need the attention, which is why I quite like the whole idea of doing it in a gorilla suit, because then I'm all covered up and who I am is, doesn't really matter.
Is that important that you're anonymous?
No, because my name and things are on the site and stuff, so if you're looking online, you'll see who I am and all the rest of it. If I've done anything bad to anybody, now's your time. I'm on the plinth, but that shouldn't happen. No, I don't need the attention. I don't need the there are bigger and greater causes, and it's an opportunity. I don't know how many people watch this thing or, log on and view it, but, I'm not going to be pumping the thing too much. We've raised all the money now in terms of, people still donate when I'm up there, that's great, but actually, it's just about having fun, a bit of entertainment. Lots of people have been saying, yeah, lots of people just standing up there and talking on their phones and they're not doing anything exciting. And actually, I think you've got to be looking at the right time of day, but, we just thought we'd have some fun now.
What do your kids think?
They think it's a little dad's barking mad, but then that's dad, that's what he does. So that's why I like dressing up, you see. I do a lot of dressing up, any excuse to dress up at a party, fancy dress, whatever. Throw me an invitation which says 70s night on it and I'm there in a flash. Trying to be incognito, but quite glad that that it's me. But it gives me that nice false, mask to wear. You can hide behind it and be extrovert and get away with it.
Will you describe yourself as extrovert?
I wouldn't, but others do.
How would you describe yourself?
I don't know, I get frightfully self-conscious and frightfully sort of concerned about what people think or say or blah blah blah, how my actions come across. Not that really rules my behaviour. So hence people think I'm an extrovert because of the way I'm behaving, and also I think from being in the military and being naturally maybe what they refer to leadership quality, I'm quite happy standing up and talking to people, and I'm pretty easygoing, all that kind of thing. So I do a bit of entertaining, I'll get the party going. So people would say I was an extrovert, but my version of me and what they say of me is different. So be it. I don't mind.
How do you spend your time when you're not working?
I spend quite a lot of time. Well, we live out in the country. I'm a big fan of sort of all things country. I've been having a bit of a midlife crisis with trying to regain the fitness and the youth that I used to have. So I've been spending a lot of time getting back into doing things like triathlons and that sort of thing. So a fair bit of training, running around, doing those kind of things as my last gasp attempt at pushing myself. And once I was fit and as I hit 40, I'm thinking, it's not going to last much longer. I'll save the bridge in the Gulf until I can't run anymore.
Where did you
I normally do ones in Windsor. There's a big one in Windsor, Windsor, Eton, and there's a couple of sort of local ones around Norwich, London. There's one. So all the sort of big ones that one hears and reads about, you can go and sign up and go and do. So yeah, me and a bunch of friends all having this little crisis together.
Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, it is. Sparking mad. I mean, why else would you want to swim for a mile, ride a bike for 40 kilometres and then run 10 of them? Age 40. The last time we did them was when we were 27, and it was fine then because we were paid to be fit and we were fit.
Were you very sporty anyway?
Yeah. And it's a pretty active lifestyle being in the infantry anyway. And yeah, it's a little midlife crisis while we all try and hang on to once we were men.
Did you have any idea of what it might be like? Did you ever think about what you'd do when you were 40 back then, the time you're talking?
No, it was a long way off. It was old. It was the people I was around who were 40 were, you know, serious positions in the military. You know, when I was in my 20s, I was surrounded by guys who were in their 40s in the military, and when you're 40 in the military, you're quite high up the food chain, and you know, quite a lot rests on your shoulders. You know, there's a lot of responsibility all the way through, but you know, they were all, you know, pretty focused, career, grown up children, all looked a million miles away from 25, just married, world's my oyster. So yeah, kind of odd. And now I find myself here again, getting shocked every time I meet 23, 24 year olds who look at me and go, wow, you're old, you've got kids, you're going grey, oof, look at that, you must be so serious. So, you know, that's part of monkeying around, really, why I'm dressed as a gorilla.
How old are your children?
10 and 7. Two boys.
Are they here today?
They are. Can't wait.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before you go up?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.